the show, everybody. It's a lovely Monday evening. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and we have lovely news of Donald Trump incompetence, rebellion within the Republican Party, another Fox News anchor going down in a couple of ways. I'm going to start with that in a second. And then of course, when you get into substance of the policies of this administration, it only gets worse. And that involves climate change and political correctness. That's an amazing story that I have for you a little bit later. And then in the second hour, have they found a gene on being transgender? So that's fascinating. And then there's Taylor Swift civil suit that involves someone grabbing her. And I think that is really interesting as to what it says about society and the sides that people have gone on that issue. It was a DJ that allegedly grabbed her butt that's going to a civil case. And then disastrous news for you guys, we'll try to make sense of it as to why it's happening. Americans are having less sex. Okay, Japan screaming right now, what now, what now? Okay, after all the stories we did about the Japanese having less sex, it turns out so are we. We will give you those interesting facts in the second hour. Okay, now having said that, let's get started.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Down goes bowling, down goes bowling, down goes bowling. Another day, another Fox News host in serious trouble. Now, he's not been fired yet, but he has been suspended. Why? Well, you might be able to tell by looking at the screen. It is alleged that by a lot of people that he sent around pictures of his genitalia to coworkers. Of course he did, it's Fox News. Okay, so let's break it down for you guys. Now, Bowling has been with Fox News and Fox Business for a decade now. He started in 2007. He was originally on Fox Business. He's probably best known for being one of the hosts of The Five, and he's not on there anymore. He's on a new program called The Specialist, which he is headlining. He's partly headlining it because of his great contacts with Donald Trump. He got an exclusive with Donald Trump. Donald Trump has praised him over and over again in social media, and it has gone back and forth that way. And so he became a star by supporting a president who was also known for sexual harassment on a network run by Roger Ailes, who was fired for sexual harassment, whose lead host was Bill O'Reilly, who was also fired for sexual harassment. So are we surprised to find out that Eric Bowling now charged with sexual harassment? Unwanted advances where pictures were flying around. It was apparently sent to three different women. Four saw it at the time, eight now confirm it. Those particular women talking to them about it contemporaneously, meaning that they saw it at the time, reported it at the time. So it's not something that's made up ex post facto. It's not something that came up because of Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly, where people go, oh, this is an opportunity, let me jump in now. No, at the time, they had seen these pictures apparently, and Huffington Post broke this story last Friday with 14 sources. So let's give you the details. HuffPo explains, Eric Bowling, a longtime Fox News host, sent an unsolicited photo of male genitalia via text message to at least two colleagues at Fox Business and one colleague at Fox News, a dozen sources told HuffPost. It's actually more than a dozen. The women, who are Bowling's current and former Fox colleagues, concluded the message was from him because they recognized his number from previous work-related and informal interactions. Okay, not only are they apparently sexual harassers, or at least allegedly, with some significant allegations here, but they're also unsurprisingly incredibly stupid. I got it, I got all sort of a dick pic. They'll never know where it came from. Eric, it's got your number on it. I'm your colleague. I have your phone number. It shows as Eric Bowling on my phone. And what is the point of these dick pics? Just to like annoy and offend people, or is it to, in his mind, seduce them, in which case you'd want to clearly label that it was yours. So this is bizarre behavior, and it was at a time when Fox News, not so long ago by the way, was where sexual harassment was running rampant, according to dozens of allegations from other women related to Ailes, O'Reilly and others, and there was nothing being done about it. So since it was consequence free, I guess he thought, why not? Again, the messages were sent several years ago on separate occasions. The women did not solicit the messages, which they told colleagues were deeply upsetting and offensive. I would imagine so. The stuff that women have to put up with is unbelievable. I mean, who, like, you're like, oh, it's a colleague. Oh, he has me on his show. This is so much fun. Oh no, he sent me his dick. Like, what an insane thing to do. I don't know, maybe I'm naive, maybe I don't know, but that's a thing that people do, I guess so. But you don't do it to colleagues, you don't do it at work. Of course that's a firing offense, that's insane. Okay, and don't send your picture of your penis to anyone who didn't ask for it. It's not a hard rule. Okay, well, more ways than one. Don't send pictures of your penis unless someone asked for it. Not complicated. Okay. Now here's his attorney, of course. Oh no, no, no. But look at the denial, denial. Mr. Bowling recalls no such inappropriate communications, does not believe he sent any such communications, and will vigorously pursue his legal remedies for any false and defamatory accusations that are made. Okay, so I know legalese, so let me break that down for you and translate it. When they say he recalls no such inappropriate communications, that means, well, unless you could prove otherwise that I definitely sent it, in which case I'll say I didn't say I didn't send it, I just said I didn't recall sending it. The second part is he does not believe he sent any such communication. If somebody accused me of that, I know I didn't send anything like that. I'd be like, no, absolutely not, completely and utterly false. Not, I don't believe I sent her a picture of my dick. No, you would know. That's not a thing you forget. He's going to pursue his legal remedies for any false and defamatory accusations that are made. They're not saying that he's going to sue now. They're just saying if there are false accusations, then we'll pursue legal charges. This is legal talk for, oh, God damn it, we did it. So I'm just bringing it down for you. Now, of course, Bowling, is he a hypocrite? Say it with me, the whole internet at the same time. Of course, right? So when it was Anthony Weiner sending dick pics, he said at the time, text us if you want a fair and balanced interview, no selfies please. At the time, he knows he did the same thing. These Fox guys are unbelievable. He said about Anthony Weiner, he is a sick human being to continue to do this time and time again, continue to get caught, saying he's not going to do it again, gets caught again. Now, to be fair to Bowling there, he's not saying he's sick for sending the pictures, he's saying he's sick for getting caught time and time again. So, Eric, I guess that makes you sick right now. Okay. Now, another denial here, kind of. Bowling himself tweets out this morning after his suspension, overwhelmed by all the support I have received, thank you. I have looked forward to clearing my name ASAP. Wait, again, there's no denial there. There's no clear saying, I didn't do it. I look forward to clearing my name, whether it's true or untrue. Amazing that in all this time, there is no clear denial. Okay, maybe not so amazing. They've got 14 sources. Okay, so, and of course, Howard Kurtz, whose main job in doing media critique at Fox News is to actually cover Fox News' ass. Every once in a while, he'll go out there and be like, oh, well, all the things that have happened at Fox are totally fine. I don't know what anybody's talking about. Thank you for that honest media critique. So he went out over the weekend and was like, none of these women have come forward. Well, first of all, look, how many times do we have to go through this? Being sexually harassed by someone who has some degree of power over you, and Bowling, we get to decide if these women came back on air, if they continued as Fox News analysts, etc. It is a very hard thing to come out for, so you don't blame people and say, well, why didn't you come out at the time? But again, at the time that it happened, they showed the pictures to other people, they have witnesses, okay? And it turns out, of course, Kurtz was wrong. Somebody did come forward, it's Dr. Caroline Heldman. She's an associate professor of politics at Occidental University. She said that Bowling referred to her as Dr. McHottie on the air, and contacted her repeatedly via phone and text with vulgar and sexually explicit messages. So actually we have a clip of that from back in the day. This is from 2011, let's watch.
We have the American Revolution and, the Boston Tea Party. We have the Civil Rights Movement and the Montgomery bus boycott. This is a part of our American fabric, and I'm happy to see that it's playing out in Wisconsin.
Actually, the senator from Wisconsin, one of the senators, thinks that this is illegal, Eric.
Yeah, I'm shocked that she said, the great Dr. McCarty said that it's the most American thing you can do. It's the least American thing you can do.
You see her reaction, they're like, Jesus, what am I going to do? Okay. All right, look, if he just left it at that, it's the usual Fox News crap, and they do that stuff on the air all the time. Eric Bolling also, when talking about a pilot for United Arab Emirates who was bombing ISIS, our ally bombing ISIS, it was a historic first female pilot to do so, coming from the UAE, said, oh, I guess it's not boots on the ground, it's boobs on the ground. That's Eric Bolling. Okay, but we're used to their disgusting sexism on air. It's the stuff that happens off air that is far worse, apparently, in the case of Bolling. So Dr. Heldman there has more details. She says, Fox was the wild west of sexual harassment. It was very clear to me that I would have been immediately off the air if I complained. And now we know through the stories that came out about Ailes and O'Reilly, that's exactly what happened to women who complained. And then she had more details in a Facebook post. She explained, he said, referring to Bolling, he wanted to fly me out to New York for in-studio hits and to have, quote, fun. He asked me to have meals with him on several occasions, but I found excuses not to go. Once he took me up to his office in New York, showed me his baseball jerseys, and in the brief time I was there, let me know that his office was his favorite place to have sex. That's not subtle. And by the way, almost the same exact MO as Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly. So, hey, I'll take you out to dinner, make sure that you come on, come to dinner with me, you don't come to dinner with me, you're off the air, come to my office, lewd references, etc. But Bolling did have the classy new age touch of actually sending pictures of his genitalia. That'll be useful in court, thank you very much. And finally, I want to leave you with an Eric Bolling quote that he had said earlier, not related to this. He said, when the lights go down on my TV career, which might be very soon, Eric, the next step is running for Senate. Probably not. You might want to reconsider those plans. So another Fox News anchor suspended for grotesque sexual harassment. Shocking, it turns out the stuff they say on air, they actually believe and practice off air. Okay, so now we go to, speaking of sexual allegations, we're gonna go to Ken Starr. Ken Starr is on TV and he has the gall to talk about a prosecutor who might be overreaching. This is of course in reference to Mueller, who is a special counsel, as Ken Starr was investigating Whitewater, which if you don't remember was a real estate deal. And he's saying how Mueller might be overreaching going into Trump's finances. But if the finances are connected to Russia, that would be at the heart of the investigation. But that's okay, let's hear him out.
Now the question is, was there collusion with the Trump campaign? So if the investigation goes beyond the Russian mandate and let's just say, well, let's just look into the financing of Trump Tower, but there's no Russian connection to it, then the argument is there, as I see it, right, that the investigation has gone too far.
Okay, wait a minute. So if they find out that he has financial deals with the Russians, and that allowed him to finance Trump Tower. For example, in a story we covered on the Young Turks, found out that one third of the apartments in Trump Tower when it first got up, and this is at a time when Donald Trump was in the middle of a bankruptcy and in massive trouble, were bought by the Russians. Now, if they're just innocent Russian citizens that would just coincidentally happen to buy one third of the apartments in Trump Tower, well, okay, then it's not related. But if it has to do with money laundering, etc., then it might be enormously related. And by the way, you don't know until you investigate that. You can't assume that it was money laundering. You can't assume that it was some sort of illegal deal with the Russians. I wouldn't do that to Trump. You'd actually have to investigate to find out if it is or it isn't. And there's only one way to do that, is to do this investigation. And by the way, it is in his mandate. Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general that put Mueller into place in the first place, and said in his letter that Mueller could investigate any matters that arose or may arise directly from the investigation. So now, Ken Starr who legendarily went above his mandate and went into Bill Clinton's sex life for reasons no one understands to this day, is going to say, well, hey, now be very careful about how far you go with this investigation. How he comes on TV and has the temerity to say this is, but it's amazing, and it's hard to understand, except Republicans just don't care about the concept of hypocrisy. They have no issue with it at all. But anyway, I want you to watch it, and then I'm going to show you a series of pictures afterwards that might give you a sense of what Ken Starr actually did.
The mandate that Bob Mueller received has some broad language, including related to type language, which tends to open the door. But there are checks and balances. The president has said, here is the red line. I think that the gravamen of the original complaint was there collusion? To the extent that you're moving beyond collusion with Russian operatives or Russian interests or the Russian government itself, and into that which doesn't seem to have a direct tie to Russia, then these questions are in fact raised. And it becomes a litigable, as we say, question that people are going to squawk about it and disagree about it. I don't think that it is clear one way or the other, but I do think it is certainly a serious matter when a special counsel is accused, and I was accused of that, of exceeding his or her authority. That's a serious matter, because we do not want investigators and prosecutors out on a fishing expedition.
Fishing expedition? Ken Starr talking about fishing expeditions. Hold on, I'm going to come back to that. But let's discuss some of the things he said earlier. Oh, the president's drawing a red line on investigating his finances. The president is the subject of the investigation. Why would the special counsel care what the subject of his investigation draws the red line? It's like a bank robber saying, hey, look, you can look into me mugging people or assaulting them, but I'm going to draw the red line on you investigating me robbing banks. And your opinion is relevant. Why? No, you don't get to set the parameters of what people investigating you investigate. And then the idea that, let's say Robert Mueller finds that Trump is clearly, obviously, flagrantly in violation of money laundering scheme. What is he supposed to do? Okay, everybody go ahead and throw that in the garbage, bury it, don't give it to the press, don't give it to authorities. It's beyond my mandate. I have clear evidence. He says it right here in the email. That's okay, burn it. No, of course you investigate that, because it came up in your investigation of Russia. If that's the case, let him do the investigation so we could all find out. And by the way, if Trump is really innocent, as he claims, and his supporters like Ken Starr are going out there defending him, well, then we'll find out that he's innocent. There'll be no smoking gun. You don't know, so let the guy do his job. Okay, now finally to the fishing expedition. Are you kidding me, Ken Starr? You guys remember what Ken Starr was actually picked to investigate? You might not. I mean, you hear the word whitewater every once in a while. Do you know what whitewater is? It's real estate in Arkansas. Here, we have a picture of it for you. This is what he was set to investigate. Did Bill Clinton have some sort of illegal or unethical or untoward deal relating to whitewater real estate in Arkansas? You know what the investigation showed? No, not at all, not guilty. So I guess Ken Starr was done, because he's not on a fishing expedition, right? He's done, right? No, he wasn't done. He's like, I don't care. That was about real estate. You know who I'm going to investigate instead? This. Wait. And go to the next picture. Show me how whitewater real estate led to Monica Lewinsky's dress. Fishing expedition? We're talking about fishing expedition? You ran the most legendary fishing expedition in American history. And you have the gall to come on TV and go, now let's make sure when Mueller's investigating many possible crimes by Trump, that there are certain crimes he should not investigate. That would be off limits. That would be exceeding your authority. You define exceeding your authority and come on here and tell us that prosecutors shouldn't go on fishing expeditions. They just are not connected to the truth or reality or facts at all. They don't care. So just go and brazenly say stuff like this on TV. Okay. I'm never going to let Ken Starr get away with that. Okay. Anyways. All right. Let's go to, by the way, to be fair to the CNN hosts, they did ask a follow-up question on it. So bless their hearts.
A lot of times you don't get that, and that drives me crazy, but they did in this case. All right, now let's go to a story about Donald Trump and Afghanistan. Okay, so Donald Trump is in the middle of deliberating, if he can do such a thing, on the issue of Afghanistan. Now, I covered the story a little bit last week too. I actually agree with him in part, and I think that he's asking legitimate questions. Hey, there it is, a little bit of agreement. Hold for the rest of the story though. But first, let me give you the parts where I feel his pain. Greg Jaffe and Philip Rucker reporting for the Washington Post here, saying he wanted to know, Trump did, why the US military wasn't winning in Afghanistan. And he asked repeatedly why, after more than 16 years of war, the United States was still stuck there. Hey, those are great questions, fair questions. H.R. McMaster is the person that he's talking to here. He's the national security advisor, and he's arranging these meetings, and he brings in generals, and they talk about their options in Afghanistan. They want to increase the amount of troops in Afghanistan, but Trump is asking a legitimate question about, wait, we've increased troops before and it hasn't worked. Why are we still not, still don't have the situation resolved after 16 years of war? And I told you last week that he was thinking of firing the general in charge there, then they had to talk him down. I don't think that it's that particular general, I just think it's a bad concept. But now the issue gets a little bit more complicated. They explain, it also highlights a contradiction, this deliberation they're having about Afghanistan, highlights a contradiction at the core of Trump's foreign policy. On the campaign trail and in conversations with advisors, Trump has said he wants to win and project strength, but he has also called for ending costly commitments in places such as Afghanistan and the Middle East. Well, look, I actually think that that doesn't have to be a contradiction. There's a thing in poker called a strong fold. So you can say, hey, this is my strong opinion that we're wasting our time in Afghanistan, and much more importantly, wasting the lives of our soldiers and the trillions of dollars that we have spent there. And the 16 years of war has been counterproductive. I am strongly exiting, I'm done with this. So generals, I asked you for options, you didn't give me options. That had any chance of success, we're leaving. So that is not a contradiction, and it drives me crazy when the press sees, okay, strong is permanent war and anything else is weak. No, that's not the case at all, and if Trump was bright, he could make that case. Unfortunately, this is where the story gets interesting, because President Trump is not that bright. So not only can he not make that distinction, he wavers back and forth. Well, should we send in more troops? Because I get to beat my chest. And you know, on the other hand, it is a mess, and I was right about that. The generals aren't winning, but the guy reporting to me at National Security Advisor is a former general, and my defense secretary is a former general, and my chief of staff is a former general. The guy lives in a contradiction because he's not bright enough to figure out that those are contradictions. Okay, so the Washington Post talked to 20 different sources for this particular story. And now, when they get to the part about H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor's challenges in trying to explain the situation in Afghanistan to Trump, that's where it gets really interesting. They explain, among his biggest challenges was holding the attention of the president. In classified briefings, Trump would frequently flit between subjects. You're the president, concentrate, concentrate, concentrate. Okay, let's get to the details. A US official says, we move very quickly from news to intelligence to policy with very little clarity on which lanes we were in. That's Trump doing that. McMaster would act like the tangents didn't happen and go back to point two on his card. See, they're dealing with a child here, right? So McMaster's like, all right, here's option one. And Trump's like, wow, did you see the rally I had? I mean, that was amazing. They love me, and the crowd sizes of inauguration. And McMaster was like, very good. Option number two in Afghanistan is this. And he's like, oh, well, you should see what Fox and Friends said. Very good. Here's option three. Right? And by the way, they do the same tricks, and they explain them here in the article as they have in all the other articles. You must show the president pictures, otherwise he can't concentrate. In the case of Afghanistan, they're showing him pictures from 1972 when women were wearing skirts. They're like, you see, Afghanistan used to be a different place, and we're trying to teach you the history of it. And he's like, yeah, okay, that's good, but back to Trump. And then the other thing that they do is they keep talking about him so that he'll pay attention. Oh, Jesus Christ, this guy's the most powerful guy on earth. It gets worse. Trump had little time for in-depth briefings on Afghanistan's history, its complicated politics, or its seemingly endless civil war. For God's sake, pay attention. Concentrate, you're the president. You need to know the historical context of Afghanistan if you're gonna make the right decisions. Oh my God, oh, history, blah, 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 blah. Oh, okay. Believe it or not, it gets worse. Even a single page of bullet points on the country seemed to tax the president's attention span on the subject, said senior White House officials. They're not making this up. They have 20 sources. These are guys inside the White House going, he can't pay attention to a single page with bullet points. It's not even solid text. Bullet points, oh, history, blah, 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 blah. Show me more pictures. And they would. They'd show them pictures of 2005 Afghanistan versus 2015. They're like, look, it's a marketplace. It's more crowded now. Isn't that progress? He's like, well, at least it's a picture. Now we go to a Trump confidant. Again, these are some of his friends. They say, I call the president the 2-minute man. Boy, that is not a good title. I don't think you want to be the 2-minute man under any context. But that's a Trump confidant saying he can't pay attention for longer than 2 minutes. God help us all. And finally, that same confidant said, the president has patience for half a page. Half a page, that's it. We thought we were down to a page filled with pictures and bullet points. Turns out we're down to half a page. Remember when preparing him to go to Europe, they were trying to teach him based on tweet-sized messages. They're like, we know he can concentrate for a tweet. So they're like, here's 140 characters. How are you going to explain the trading relationships we have with the G20 partners all across the world in tweet-sized information? How are you going to explain Afghanistan, its complexities, and make the right decisions on what to do when the president can't pay attention for longer than half a page? Republicans, if you care about the country, man, this, pick another guy who has all the things that you like, doesn't like immigrants, doesn't like Muslims, whatever it is that you, or you think is somehow going to give you better health care, or you're incredibly rich and you want lower taxes, whatever it is that you want, pick another guy, because this guy's a child and he's going to cause grave damage. In the case of Afghanistan, like I said, I'm not against him on the issue. For God's sake, pick the one where we leave. Pick that option. That's what you said on the campaign trail. Do that one, right? But when you have an issue like North Korea, and we're going to have to make a momentous decision, and we might go to war, and millions of lives might be on the line, you really want this guy making that decision? No, you don't. Not even if you're a Republican, you don't want that. And now there's other stories out, famous backers like Peter Thiel, the legendary investor in San Francisco who made a big speech at the convention backing Trump, now reconsidering their decision, going, the one word that defines his administration so far is incompetence. I told you. I told you during the campaign, I've been telling you that since. The guy is legendarily incompetent, and now even his backers are seeing that. He's a danger to the country and a danger to the world. Young Turks. All right, guys, we're back on the Young Turks. So let me read a couple tweets for you. Gabby Marita writes in, yeah, but how was Bowling's golden parachute? Or I only got $25 million as a great payday for being a sexual deviant. Roger Ailes got a $40 million golden parachute. Isn't the life of the elite dandy that they allegedly, and in the case of Ailes and O'Reilly, certainly proven enough to get fired? In case of Bowling, proven enough to get a clear suspension, pulled off the air. His name's been taken off the show already for the moment being on social media. And they get $25 million for it, $40 million. Could you imagine if you did something wrong and then somebody gave you a $40 million check, let alone something this outrageous? All right. The liberal mom says, blowjob for Clinton, impeach. Trump fucking the whole country with the help of the Russians, don't go fishing. Okay. And it's funny how the guys who allegedly were so upset about Bill Clinton defiling the Oval Office with his oral sex shenanigans don't seem to mind Eric Bowling sending dick pics to the women that he works with, let alone Roger Ailes chasing them around the room with his penis out, let alone Bill O'Reilly doing phone sex with them that they did not ask for and involving loofahs and falafels. Okay, now let's go to important policy issues. Let's go to Trump administration doing some serious damage here. Okay, The Guardian has, in an exclusive, found a series of emails between the staff of the National Resources Conservation Service. That's a USDA unit that oversees farmers' land conservation. What do the emails show? Not good. They explain, a missive from Bianca Mobis-Kloon, director of soil health, lists terms that should be avoided by staff and those that should replace them. Now, let me pause here to explain what political correctness is and the history behind it. So it is not if you find something offensive, that is not what political correctness is. It's often misused that way. It actually has a literal background, a historical background where it originated from. And some people say, it was the Soviets who did it. Some say it was the Nazis who did it. It was actually both. The Soviets and the Nazis would send directives to their political operatives saying, whether something is factually correct is not important. It needs to be politically correct. You must use this kind of language when describing, in their case, the Jews or the pogroms, the famines, etc. They would say, don't call it a famine, call it something else, and that would be the politically correct term. So in this case here, we have the Trump administration telling scientists working at these organizations, you are not to use the factually correct words, you are to use the politically correct words. So let's give you the details. They explain in the emails, climate change is in the avoid category to be replaced by weather extremes. Instead of climate change adaptation, staff are asked to use resilience to weather extremes. And you see the Orwellian twist there too. It's no longer a problem, it's something that shows our resilience. Resilience to weather extremes. Well, doesn't that sound lovely? George Orwell from the grave going, I told you. Well, yes, you did, sir. They explain further here, the primary cause of human-driven climate change is also targeted, with the term reduced greenhouse gases blacklisted in favor of, quote, build soil organic matter, increase nutrient use efficiency. Meanwhile, sequester carbon is ruled out and replaced by, quote, build soil organic matter. Now, I'm not sure those things are even related, but everything is turned into a positive. No, we're not. We don't have to worry about reducing greenhouse gases. We're building soil organic matter and we're increasing nutrient use efficiency. You see how that's great? This is the definition of political correctness. And by the way, if you all these years you're a right winger who claimed that you hate political correctness, I'm sure that you're on a rampage about this, and I'm sure that you're being honest and calling out the Trump administration, right? Right? Now, let me give you more details in case you want them. It has become, this is Jimmy Bramblett now, he's the deputy chief for programs at NRCS. And he wrote, quote, it has become clear one of the previous administration's priorities is not consistent with that of the incoming administration. Namely, that priority is climate change. Please visit with your staff and make them aware of this shift in perspective within the executive branch. So now he wrote that 4 days after the inauguration. The emails I quoted previously are from February 16th, so a little bit about a month after the inauguration. So they come in and immediately start changing the words. And in the case of Bramblett, he's saying, now remember, he's talking to a bunch of scientists. He's not saying, hey, adjust the research project you're working on. Let's not only investigate climate change, but let's also investigate economic concerns, whatever it might be, right? He's saying, no. Stop your looking into it. We're not doing climate change anymore. Science, schmience, I don't care. We're going in a politically correct direction. Bramblett added that, quote, prudence should be used when discussing greenhouse gases, and said the agency's work on air quality regarding these gases could be discontinued. Now, if you're a scientist and you're trying to find out, hey, is this stuff going in the air? Don't look into it. We don't want to know the facts. We're not interested in science. Hey, right wingers, just be proud. Just say it, man. Say you love political correctness, and that's okay. Or speak out against the Trump administration on this issue. Say that you don't like science and you don't want them to do science, and just proudly declare what you are. You don't like facts, you don't like science. Or say, how dare they? Look, we know with great certainty that if you did the correct science on it, you will find out that there is no climate change. All this, 9 out of the last 10 years all broke records for the hottest temperature there is. But it's a wild coincidence, and I'm sure the scientists are going to prove it. Own it. But here, they're not doing that. They're just saying stop the science. So now, let's remember in the context of all the things that the Trump administration did. Mentions of the dangers of climate change have been removed from the websites of the White House and the Department of Interior, while the EPA scrapped its entire online climate section in April, pending a review that will be, quote, updating language to reflect the approach of new leadership. So, and you probably heard those stories before. This is a new one regarding this particular agency and the emails that prove exactly how they were doing it. So when you take it in total, it's a total war on science. So one person inside the agency, a staffer, asked a great question. He says, I would like to know the correct terms I should use instead of climate change and anything to do with carbon. I want to ensure to incorporate correct terminology that the agency has approved to use. Man, you couldn't have written it better back in fascist Germany and communist dictatorial Soviet Union. And it's not on Tim Hafner, I don't know what his position is. He's just asking as a bureaucrat, what is now the politically correct words to use? I know what the correct words are, I know what the scientifically correct words are, I know what the English words are. What's the language you want me to use in order to deceive people? He doesn't add that last part, but it's obvious. It doesn't matter, even if you think it's not to deceive. Now there is politically correct language, and it is enforced throughout the Trump administration. What do conservatives do all the time? Whatever they want to do, they project onto liberals. The liberals want political correctness. Don't let them use scientific terms. Make sure that you stamp that out, okay? Now, the last part. If you're not convinced yet that they're against science, wait till you get a load of this. As The Guardian explains, Sam Clovis, Trump's nomination to be the USDA's chief scientist, has labeled climate research junk science. Let's pause there for one quick second before I get to the best part. Now, if you think that the science is wrong, well, as a chief scientist, the guy's chief scientist, you would bring in your legendary other scientists, the tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of scientists paid by the fossil fuel industry, to come in and go, oh no, guys, you got the science wrong, but it's okay, I can prove it to you. No, you're not going to do any of that, because you know it's not true. You say, junk science, we won't be doing that anymore. All you scientists, go take a 4-year vacation, right? Anyway, let's be fair, Sam Clovis nominated to be the chief scientist for this group. Last quote. Last week, it was revealed that Clovis, who is not a scientist, once ran a blog where he called progressives race traitors and race traitors, and likened Barack Obama to a communist. The most important part of that sentence is the chief scientist who is not a scientist. They literally brought in a propaganda guy who made outrageous propaganda claims against Obama and other progressives, and they installed him, or they want to install him, as the chief scientist. They're rubbing your face in it, including you conservatives. They're saying, I thank you, schmucks, keep making those arguments about how, no, we're pro-science too. We're going to take a guy who's not even a scientist. Clear, obvious propaganda guy, make him the chief scientist. And we're going to tell them, no, political correctness is not an option anymore. It is mandatory. But go ahead and make our arguments for us. Pretend it's the liberals doing it. Now at least you know. So if you want to be a conservative, you want a Republican, you want to support Trump, have at it, Hoss. Just proudly declare who you are. You are in favor of political correctness, and don't ever, ever complain about anybody else's political correctness again. And you're not for science, it's okay. Raise your hand and admit how stupid you are. No problem, have pride in it. Tell us out and proud, come out of the closet and tell us you don't believe in science. God bless, just say it, because that's what they're doing right here. Okay. These right wingers, they have all these things. Oh man, oh. Liberals just act out of emotion. We deal in facts. That's a good one. Okay. All right, let's go to the next story. Okay. Wow. And story out of the New York Times explaining how all of, not all, to be fair, a lot of different Republicans are angling to run in 2020. wait a minute, as a Republican president, he'd be up for a second term in 2020. They're like, yeah, sure. Sure, he'll still be there. Sure, he'll be running. And he'll be unopposed, of course. Okay, so now let's give you the details. As you can tell, it also involves his own vice president. President Trump's first term is ostensibly just warming up, the New York Times explains. But luminaries in his own party have begun what amounts to a shadow campaign for 2020, as if the current occupants of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue weren't involved. So who are the players here? Senators Tom Cotton and Ben Sass, I like to call him Classy Ben Sassy, even though that's not how his name is pronounced because it's fun, have already been to Iowa this year. Governor John Kasich is eyeing a return visit to New Hampshire. And Mike Pence's schedule is so full of political events that Republicans joke that he is acting more like a second term vice president, hoping to clear the field than a number two sworn in a little over just 6 months ago. So if you're unfamiliar with politics, going to Iowa is a telltale sign that you're running for president. You don't randomly go to Iowa, which is the first state to have a caucus, and New Hampshire. Like, oops, did I wind up in Iowa and New Hampshire? What fun two random states that I went to as a senator. No, that means I'm running for president. Now, it doesn't mean it every time, but it means it most of the time. And certainly, it's a way of dipping your toe in to test the waters. How am I received in Iowa and New Hampshire? They're not randomly going to Alaska and Nebraska because they don't have the first two contests in a presidential election. Iowa and New Hampshire do. So, Tom Cotton, I see you, brother. Tom Cotton, who's like, oh yeah, Trump, sure, fine. Hey, what's going on in Iowa? I got to get over there. At least Sass has the honesty to admit that he is opposing Trump on many issues. And Kasich has been very blunt about it. So there's no issue at all. Kasich ran against him before, hasn't supported him, didn't support the healthcare proposal. He thinks there's a different, he has a different view on what it means to be a conservative. So he's doing this in plain sight. Okay. Now, the would-be candidates are cultivating some of the party's most prominent donors, courting conservative interest groups and carefully enhancing their profiles. Mr. Trump has given no indication that he will decline to seek a second term. So, ding, 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 that's signpost number two. You go to Iowa, New Hampshire, that's one. Number two is donors, where the money at? Okay, show me the money. Now, you can claim that you're raising for your own Senate candidacy. I don't know what the vice president would be raising for in a first term. Did you know that his PAC, Pence has his own PAC, we'll get to it, and it has raised more money than Trump's PAC? Why don't you make it a little bit more obvious? Right? There is no campaign for the vice presidency that would come up in a re-election. If it was a second term, yeah, the vice president's likely to run for president, it makes a lot of sense. In the first term, that's just going, just in case. All right. Lindsay Walters, a White House spokesperson, says, No. The president is as strong as he's ever been in Iowa, and every potentially ambitious Republican knows that. By the way, that's the White House not denying the story. That's saying the story is true, but they better watch themselves because we're strong in Iowa and we'll kick their ass. Interesting. John McCain is asked about it. He says, I love this quote. They see weakness in this president. Look, it's not a nice business we're in. In other words, they're going to cut you if they think you're weak, especially Republicans. All right, now let's go to Kasich. Mr. Kasich has been more defiant. The Ohio governor, who ran unsuccessfully in 2016, has declined to rule out a 2020 campaign in multiple television interviews and has indicated to associates that he may run again, even if Mr. Trump seeks another turn. So Kasich, I pardon you. He's being honest about it, that's all. He probably will run against Trump. Have at it, Hoss. The duplicitous ones are the interesting ones, especially Pence. Now, New York Times continues, most significant, multiple advisors to Mr. Pence have already intimated to party donors that he would plan to run if Mr. Trump did not. Now, to be fair, it's if Trump didn't, but boy, they're making a lot of plans. So they apparently don't have a lot of faith that either Trump's going to be in office at that time, or that he's going to be in good enough shape to even seek re-election. Which is a very, very low bar. Okay, the vice president created his own political fundraising committee, Great America Committee, shrugging off warnings from some high-profile Republicans that it would create speculation about his intentions. The group, set up with the help of Jack Oliver, a former fundraiser for George W. Bush, has overshadowed Mr. Trump's own primary outside political group, America First Action, even raising more in disclosed donations. Yeah, you don't set up this committee and get all these folks if you're not interested in running, but I've got more. Mr. Pence has made no overt efforts to separate himself from the beleaguered president. He has kept up his relentless public praise and even in private is careful to bow to the president. Now, we showed you that in previous weeks because it's a very smart move by Mike Pence. Number one, you go both on TV, which Trump watches, and in person to Trump go, "Oh, Mr. President, I bow to you. Oh, you are so great, Mr. President. Me, raise money behind your back and go to Iowa and go to these events and tell donors I might run. I would never do that. I bow to you, Mr. President, I bow to you." So he does that to keep his job. Well, that might not be in Trump's control anyway, but it's smart politically to do to keep the president happy. Plus, more importantly, he gets a turnaround if something happens to Trump to all the Trump voters and go, "I was behind your guy the whole time. Don't you remember me embarrassing myself on national TV going, 'Oh, Mr. Trump, you are so, so right. It's been the greatest honor and privilege of my life to even be seated next to you.'" So it is crafty, but let's get you more details if you're not convinced. Mr. Pence also installed Nick Ayers, a sharp-elbowed political operative, as his new chief of staff last month. A striking departure from Vice President's long history of elevating a government veteran to be their top staff member. Mr. Ayers had worked on many campaigns, but never in the federal government. This thing's over. You don't hire a political operative who's never worked in the federal government if you're not interested in running a political race, let alone the fact that you made him your chief of staff. In other words, this is the only thing I care about. He's not alone, to be fair. Let's go to Nikki Haley. She's the ambassador to the United Nations and a former governor of South Carolina. And she put her longtime pollster on the payroll and has gotten better acquainted with some of New York's financiers, since the UN is in New York, and carved out a far more muscular foreign policy niche than Mr. Trump. Look, you can say, hey, Republican, she's going to go to meet with donors all the time, even though as UN ambassador, I don't, what do donors have to do with your job? I don't know. Okay, fine. But you hired a pollster? What are you polling, the opinions of Zimbabwe on our latest UN resolution? There's no reason for a political pollster to be on the staff of a UN ambassador. No, these people are brazenly going out there going, "Yeah, of course we're going to run when this schmuck implodes. I mean, turn on the TV. Can't you see it with your own eyes?" Man, this kind of insubordination is fascinating. And Trump usually hates this stuff. But again, you know why they do this so publicly and openly? Because they think he's too stupid to figure it out. And until the New York Times spelled it out for him, it was probably true. All right, of course Mike Pence is going to deny it. So here's his denials. He says, "Today's article in the New York Times is disgraceful and offensive to me, my family, and our entire team." Why do they always bring family into it? No, nobody talked about your family. Nobody cares what your wife is doing. Okay, but always like with these guys, like, "I'm a good Christian. So my family is offended that you have pointed out how much money I've raised." Well, did you raise the money or didn't you? Finally, we go to that denial. "The allegations in this article are categorically false and represent just the latest attempt by the media to divide this administration." And then he went on to call New York Times fake news. I know, Trump will give you a nice pat on the head for that. But which part is fake? Now, you can say, "Well, I didn't really say that to the donors and my advisors didn't really say that to the donors." And that'll be hard to prove, it's a little he said, she said. But did you go to the donors? Yes. Did you raise more money than Trump's PAC in disclosed donors? Yes. Did you go to all these events that look like campaign events? They went to the pig roast in Iowa. The pig roast in Iowa? There's only one reason you go there. If you're running, planning to run for president. Was that false? No, not false. All that stuff is totally true. So if you think, no, Trump's fine, the media is making it all up, you should tell people in his administration and other Republican senators, because they don't think he's fine. They think he's already mortally wounded and they're picking at his carcass. We'll be right back. All right, back at the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur. Two quick tweets for you guys. Cynthia Sorensen has an interesting idea. Snoop Dogg and Cenk 2020. All right, well, there it is. You're the first to suggest it, for better or for worse. FakeNewsUSA.blog writes in, "When all you do is campaign, you don't have time to govern, get money out of politics." Hear, hear on that. So that unfortunately applies equally to Republicans and Democrats. And one of the great, there are many reasons to get money out of politics, including most importantly corruption. But also, we elected you to do a job, and that wasn't to raise money to get reelected. It was to actually govern. Okay, now let's go to the next story. So John Kelly is the new chief of staff for Donald Trump. He replaced Ryan Priebus, and the media was fawning over him. We covered it last week. Oh my God, the square jawed general, and he's a man of great discipline, and he'll bring order to the White House, and he'll straighten him out and make sure Trump is on message. And I immediately said, no, he won't. It's not because he doesn't have a square jaw or that he isn't into discipline. It's that Trump is undisciplinable. Yes, that's a made up word. Trump would enjoy it. So he's not gonna listen to John Kelly. Did you know that when before John Kelly became the chief of staff, he almost quit when Trump fired Comey? So he almost acts out of principle. Now, if he acts out of principle when he's the chief of staff, you think Trump's gonna tolerate that? No, he's gonna say, hey, you're supposed to be loyal to me. How come you're not being loyal, John? All right, so now let me remind you of what they said about John Kelly when he first came in. New York Times says, Mr. Kelly cuts off rambling advisors on mid-sentence. He listens in on conversations between cabinet secretaries and the president. He has booted lingering staff members out of high-level meetings and ordered the doors of the Oval Office closed to discourage strays. Oh, there you go. He comes in right there, discipline, okay? Bloomberg says, while Kelly isn't vetting every presidential tweet, Trump has shown a willingness to consult with his chief of staff before hitting send on certain missives that might cause an international uproar or lead to unwelcome distractions. According to three people familiar with interactions, Kelly has been, quote, offering a different way to say the same thing, one person said. I read that and thought, no, that's not gonna work. And of course, today we get this tweet from Tara Palmieri, from a White House correspondent for Politico. I was told Kelly's accepted that he will not have control over tweets. No one controls Trump's Twitter. Of course. And yesterday, Trump was wildly tweeting about Senator Richard Blumenthal and getting himself in all sorts of trouble with veteran groups. You think any, I don't care how square his jaw is. No one can get Trump to put down his tweets. Of course he's gonna send them out, because he's a child. You're misunderstanding the situation. He doesn't have the intellectual capacity or self-control to be guided, even if John Kelly was a person who could guide him in the right direction and was great at guiding people. It doesn't matter, because the guy he's reporting to is the problem. So yes, tweets galore, this whole idea that Kelly's gonna get him under control, totally a myth, was never gonna happen, and has already now been flushed down the toilet. So I asked you guys this question, poll on tytnetwork.com/Kelly, will Trump eventually fire John Kelly? Now, again, last week, if you asked all the mainstream media, the guys on TV, the guys on New York Times and everyone else, oh no, John Kelly's got this thing figured out, everything's gonna be all right going forward. No. Like I said about George W. Bush when he was down on the polls and people said, oh no, no, he's gonna make a comeback. I said he doesn't have the capacity for a comeback, and it turned out to be true. All that happened was George Bush's ratings continued to slide down for the last couple of years of his administration. Same is true of Donald Trump, and worse. No, eventually John Kelly will do something that makes sense and Trump will get angry at him and fire him. So remember, Trump still thinks he's on Apprentice and has to fire at least one person every week. All right, now let's go to those tweets that I was telling you about. Senator Richard Blumenthal was on TV and he was talking about the Russian investigation, and of course Trump was beside himself with anger. Turns out that Trump was watching TV. No. First, let me show you what Blumenthal said.
The Russia investigation, the impanelment of the grand jury, shows that Bob Mueller is pursuing this potential wrongdoing by the Russians, the attack on our democracy, seriously and diligently. And there is no minimizing or underestimating that attack by the Russians. It was purposeful and relentless, and it involved propaganda and hacking into our voting machines, or at least an attempt to do it, and potential collusion by the Trump campaign, and then obstruction of justice. That investigation must be pursued.
Now, it's a very normal thing to say on cable news. They talk about Russia all the time. He's talking about Mueller who's doing an investigation. Makes sense, right? And he's a Democratic senator, so nothing here is surprising. But Trump, of course, can't stand any criticism. John Kelly's chief of staff was supposed to get him under control. He ain't under control, so he grabs a Twitter machine and starts to tweet out. And so he says this: interesting to watch Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut talking about hoax Russian collusion when he was a phony Vietnam con artist. Now, wait a minute. I'm going to get into his Vietnam record in a second, but what does that have to do anything with the Russia investigation? Nothing at all. Just back to bully Donald Trump. Oh yeah, lying Ted, crooked Hillary. Blumenthal didn't go to Vietnam, right? So he continues. Never in US history has anyone lied or defrauded voters like Senator Richard Blumenthal. Well, there might be one exception. Just look at that picture up there. Anyway, he told stories about, he says, about his Vietnam battles and conquests, how brave he was, and it was all a lie. He cried like a baby and begged for forgiveness like a child. Now he judges collusion. Again, collusion and Vietnam have nothing to do with one another. But second of all, he didn't cry like a baby. And this is the president. This is the president saying these outrageous, insane things, accusing senators of crying like babies. All right, let's go to the truth now. Now, Raw Story explains, while Blumenthal has publicly apologized for claiming that he served in Vietnam, he did actually enlist in the United States Marine Corps Reserve, where he served from 1970 to 1976. So look, you want to blame Blumenthal for being a cheesy politician who lied about actually going to Vietnam, fine. But he is definitely a veteran. He's a Marine, and no one disputes that. Okay. So now let's for a second, let's turn to Trump's military record, find out what happened there. Trump, meanwhile, was granted 4 deferments on the draft while he was studying at Fordham University and the University of Pennsylvania, and then was subsequently medically disqualified during an armed forces physical examination for supposed bone spurs in his feet, although no records exist to verify this claim. And of course, he famously, during the campaign, when asked which foot had a bone spur, couldn't remember and said, maybe both. He didn't have no bone spur. He didn't want to go to Vietnam. Now he criticizes actual veterans. So veterans on Twitter stepped in and are quite enraged about this. We have some fun tweets. Robert Googly Lemmy says, you, Mr. President, have absolutely no right to criticize anyone who served. Won't be silenced, says Draft Dodger, says what? Vets Against Trump says, 5 draft deferments, using your wealth and privilege to avoid fighting while others less elite were drafted. Hashtag Vets Against Trump. And then Tully Mox was a little bit more blunt. I'm a veteran, you chicken hawk piece of trash. You have no room to talk. The only service you had was avoiding STDs. Now, if you're wondering what they're referring to there, well, I have the quotes for you. So when talking to Howard Stern throughout the years, Donald Trump has said, you know, if you're young and in this era, and if you have any guilt about not having gone to Vietnam, we have our own Vietnam. It's called the dating game. Dating is like being in Vietnam. You're the equivalent of a soldier going over to Vietnam. Because he was worried about the STDs while dating. Now, I didn't go to Vietnam. I'm too young. And I don't make claims about whether I would have gone or not gone, etc. I have the decency to not insult the veterans who went to Vietnam. Now, whether it was a war that was wrong or not, they went, they risked their lives, they went through hell there. And this guy flippantly talks about, like, I mean, when I was dating all those women, because I'm really rich, avoiding the sexually transmitted diseases was like going to Vietnam. No, it wasn't. I can assure you it really, really wasn't. He's not done. He had one more quote on that. He said, it's amazing about, again, avoiding STDs. I can't even believe it. I've been so lucky in terms of that whole world. It is a dangerous world out there. It's like Vietnam, sort of. It's my personal Vietnam. I feel like a great and very brave soldier. So that's Donald Trump and his service to the country. And he has the temerity to attack a guy who served as a Marine for 6 years. And now when people called him out, hey, stop watching TV and sending these insane tweets. He then tweets, the White House is functionally functioning perfectly, focused on healthcare, tax cuts, reform, and many other things. I have very little time for watching TV. Okay, are you ready for this? John Berman from CNN said, for what it's worth, we were talking about this subject on TV just before the tweet. In other words, he watches them talking on TV about how he watches too much TV and sends a tweet immediately going, I'm not watching TV. The guy is a pathological liar. And in his own words, sad baby. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, amazing facts, including Americans having less sex. Let's try to find out why. Apparently, significantly so. It is a disaster for our country. And then there's the scientists might be are trying to find a gene that might determine if you're transgender. Is that a good idea or a bad idea? And there's a stat about transgender folks there that is stunning. That's coming up in the second hour. We'll see you there.